From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. You may notice, fellow listeners, astute conspiracy realist, that our super producer, Alexis, has a codename now. It is not TBD. It is not allegedly. It is codename Doc Holliday. It is very important to her. She told us off air that we say the full thing. So not just Doc Holliday. It has to be codename colon Doc Holliday. I don't know. I love it. What do you guys think?
I love it too. Are you going to say colon every time as well, or is the colon just implied?
No. That's just a one-time spell
okay.
out.
Got
and
it.
Also, you know, we've got a lot of doctors in the audience, of course, so the colon is always implied.
Exactly.
I think Alexis, we're going to have to trim it down at some point just to talk about you in shorthand to code Holliday. I think I like that.
It's pretty good too.
Well, you know, we're working it out, right? Oh, we've got a thumbs up. Got a thumbs up from our producer. So this is, as you know, longtime listeners, this is our weekly strange new segment where the three of us get together in a meeting of the minds, and we talk about some reports, some allegations, some rumors, some news stories that have not gotten the mainstream shake they deserve. We usually each give you one, and we present it to our colleagues. Sometimes off air, we figure out which order we want to do things in, but I don't think we did today. I went first last time. Who wants to go first this time?
Okay, it'll be me then.
Hero.
Sure. So for our story, this first story, we're going to take a little trip to a place that maybe you haven't been for a while. Maybe you've never been there. Maybe you don't even know where it is. But you should, and you will learn right now. Papua New Guinea. You may have heard it called Papua New Guinea. That's incorrect. There was something strange that happened on the way to Australia from Papua New Guinea. And it was a plane crash. A very strange plane crash. It was one of these smaller planes that you may have seen, similar to a Cessna, where, you know, you have a few people on board and you've got a little bit of space for cargo, but not much else other than that. This plane crashed very recently. I believe it was last week when it occurred, just before the weekend. And when the plane crashed, you know, authorities thought, okay, well, there's a little Cessna 402C. It's a little twin-engine aircraft. It went down. And when authorities found the wreckage of this plane, there was nobody around. There were no bodies, as in somebody got, you know, gravely injured or died. They couldn't really figure out what happened to this plane. It was just left there in the middle of essentially nowhere near an airport that was, I believe it was a restricted airport, or was it an airport that generally wasn't supposed to be used. So they look up the registration of this plane. It was registered to a Papua New Guinea company. It was called Ravenpole Number 69 LTD, or Limited. And there was one guy named Jeffrey Bull Paul, who was the sole proprietor of this company. He's the only person, the only shareholder that had anything to do with Ravenpole Number 69 Limited. But here's the deal. He died almost exactly a year ago when he was stabbed to death in a city there in Papua New Guinea called Port Moresby. So then the authorities are trying to track down what the heck is going on with this. Well, how did this plane registered to this guy who died last year end up here crashing now all of a sudden? And as they continued to try and figure out what was going on here, long story short, there was the biggest drug bust that has occurred, I believe, ever in Papua New Guinea. It's the biggest one ever in the history of Papua New Guinea. 500 kilograms of cocaine were discovered and taken into custody.
Yowzers.
That's 1,102 pounds of cocaine.
And like, how much weight can one of these little planes carry? Like, what's the limit for one of these aircrafts in general with like maximum passenger weight and stuff? It seems to me like it wouldn't be a hell of a lot more than that. That's insane.
Well, no, there are heavy calculations you have to make with regards to the amount of weight a plane can carry like that when you're comparing it to the amount of fuel you have to carry, because the fuel actually carries weight as well. It's a fun little bit of, I guess, calculus to make that happen. I've never had to calculate that before.
Oh, it's a Cessna 402, right, Matt?
Yeah, it's a 402C.
402C. So in general, 402C is going to have a maximum takeoff weight of 6,850 pounds.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying. Yeah, it's not...
Totally.
Too unreasonable, but we also have to imagine that there would be pilots or some kind of crew, right? This wasn't an autonomous plane, was it?
Well, yeah. So you're getting to the main point here. It appears, and this has not been fully confirmed yet, but it appears as though the amount of cocaine, the bricks essentially that were packed onto this plane, probably led to it crashing and not being able to carry that much weight. We cannot confirm that as of right now. Maybe there was something else that happened. We don't have enough information yet. But if so, it would mean that someone was attempting to smuggle more cocaine than they could carry out of Papua New Guinea to take it back to Australia, apparently. Because there was one Australian man who turned himself into the authorities there in Papua New Guinea. He's been charged with immigration offenses, but it's likely that he's going to be charged with drug importation, I think. It's expected to be laid against this one person. And he appears to be the pilot, the person that was actually attempting to take that aircraft out. And then it also seems, again, this is an ongoing investigation, but it seems like there was a whole group of people, what The Guardian refers to as a syndicate, that was based in Papua New Guinea, who was, you know, actually doing something with the cocaine itself to then get it on the plane to get it to Australia. And here's a quote from the Guardian article from which I am reading. It says, "Police are in possession of information related to the suspected PNG members of the group who have been involved in this criminal activity, including descriptions, unique features, and tattoos." Ooh. There was a truck, apparently, that had something to do with this, where there are a bunch of hidden compartments built into the truck itself, into the chassis, where they were storing a lot of these drugs. It's really, really interesting stuff.
It's interesting, too, because wasn't it like some kind of makeshift like airfield that it crashed at? I wonder what that even means. Like, what is a makeshift airfield? I guess they just kind of like cleared some brush, you know, in the rough shape of a landing strip. Doesn't seem very safe is what I'm getting at.
I'm unsure. The pictures that are available online that you can see, it looks as though the plane crashed into what essentially looks like a grassy field that has a bunch of trees in it. Mm-hmm. So probably would be pretty dangerous.
And so, Matt, I mean, we're talking 1,000 pounds of cocaine. I mean, it wasn't like in one big brick, right? Like, how was it hidden in this craft? Or was it hidden at all?
No, it wasn't. The drugs weren't found at the plane crash site. Somebody in Papua New Guinea or the Australian man or somebody came and got those drugs out from the crash site and moved them elsewhere.
Yeah, from my understanding, here's what the authorities currently think happened, or I should say officially think happened. They do think the plane was overloaded. That's interesting because we just confirmed the Cessna can carry more than 1,000 or 1,100 pounds worth of something. But they think this Cessna crashed when it was attempting to take off. And then they think the pilot came back later in the afternoon between 1 and 2:30 to collect the drugs. And they, there's some things I'm not clear on here Not to sound too skeptical, but with any official report of a large-scale drug bust, I always wonder how much they actually found. You know what I mean? Like, I can't believe we've busted 1,000 pounds of cocaine. And someone else is like, you know, a day later at the press conference, they're like, we can't believe we found 800 pounds of cocaine. And then by the time, you know, it gets to the evidence room, they're like, 500 pounds of cocaine? That's amazing. But we know, first off, this is a Port Moresby is the capital city, but this is also a pretty small country. So I feel like moving weight to that degree, especially if you have international ties to organized crime, like the Australians you mentioned, Matt, are suspected to be in with the some Italian organized criminals. I feel like it's easy to spot anomalies. Now, as far as specifically where they were caught and how they were apprehended, I haven't seen a lot of details yet, but I have seen people guessing that because of the size of the plane, they took the flight in multiple legs. Like they made the first leg and then they had to stop and refuel for the second leg. Yeah. And then trying to take off on that second time is when everything went sideways, or great for the authorities.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I forgot to mention here, the pilot did come, or the plane itself did come from Australia. We know that. And here is the crazy thing about that. And I've never heard of this. Maybe this is just something that occurs that's just slipped past my knowledge all this time. But the Cessna was flying at around 3,000 feet altitude while it made its way from Australia over to Papua New Guinea. And that what that does is essentially, probably, hopefully, keeps you off of radar. If you're flying that way, because they did enter into the country illegally without permission, without any knowledge from any authorities, that plane came into the country and landed or tried to land, depending on what happened.
And the authorities from both countries gave themselves a good old pat on the back at the end of this article. The Australian Border Force Assistant Commissioner, a guy named Peter Timpson, said, quote, "This particularly audacious attempt shows just how brazen criminal enterprises can be, but it also highlights just how effective the law enforcement response can be when we all work together." So, you know.
You think he was coked up when he made that statement? I'm kidding.
I can neither confirm nor deny that. That's bonkers, man. I don't know that I've ever heard of this much drugs being moved in one fell swoop. I guess you think of kilos from like movies or like, you know, if everyone's watched Narcos, it's like a size of like a Bible, kind of, maybe a little bit bigger. It's like a bundle, usually comes in like a, you know, prepackaged thing, looks like a brick almost. So 500 of those. That's wild. Well, I guess sort of a happy ending, because, man, of all of the drug trade stuff, cocaine is one of the nastiest in terms of like the cartels and the loss of life and just the way that it just the, you know, the chain of misery that goes into that is pretty intense.
You know, there is a picture, if you want to see this, on AsiaPacificReport.nz. There is a pretty good picture of a truck bed that has exactly what Noel is describing there to you. You can look at it and it's pretty intense. It just looks like a bunch of maybe bags that are wrapped in plastic wrap, but like black bags, maybe. I think I can't quite tell.
So it's interesting because we see a lot of human ingenuity, some real MacGyverness when it comes to the various methods of illicitly smuggling drugs or animal parts or people into and out of a given country. We did an episode of this with Scott Benjamin for Car Stuff years back, but it still holds up. And you can see some crazy things here. This story doesn't feel like it's over with, though, because to be absolutely clear and make sure we emphasize this, authorities currently suspect the plane was overloaded with cocaine, which caused the crash. And when there are drug smugglers using aircraft, they're typically going to, unless they're the CIA, they're typically going to use very small aircraft. They're going to fly under radar. They will try to get the most bang for their buck because it's such a risky trip. not so much to get stuff out of a country that manufactures it, but to get it to the destination country, which typically is going to have more in terms of border security. So they speculate the weight of the cocaine may have overloaded the plane, made it difficult to take off. But that also, again, if that is true, that means that there's a lot of cocaine that was not found. So in my mind, this is still an ongoing investigation.
That's right. And also, I mean, if you think about how cocaine is sold and distributed, this is pure cocaine, likely. So the amount of pure cocaine in one of those kilograms that would be divvied up into sellable quantities, you know, and diluted, this shipment could conceivably supply, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different dealers. So they speculate, the Australian Border Force, that this was a significant disruption to the drug supply on Australia's eastern seaboard.
This is millions of dollars. And this is not, you know, cartels are not like corporations in terms of human resources. I think it's pretty safe to say someone is going to literally lose their head over this.
Yeah. And here's something else I wanted to bring up, you guys. So this one instance where drugs have been found on this island, Papua New Guinea, it's not the only time. Especially if you look at the other South Pacific islands like Vanuatu, Tonga, New Caledonia, there are drugs that are literally being washed up, like kilos, bricks of cocaine being washed up on the shores there. You remember that? Didn't we do an episode about
Cocaine Island?
Cocaine Island.
Yeah.
So here's what authorities supposedly know, at least the ones in Australia. Cocaine is loaded up onto sailboats, usually in Latin America. The Guardian here cites Bogota as one of the places. And then it is taken via sailboat to Australia, to a couple port cities in Australia. And the way you travel to get there, you go right past these South Pacific islands. So the theory here is that, well, it's not even a theory. It's known by people who live on the islands and authorities there that there are constantly ships that get scuttled because they'll hit a coral reef or something in that area. Then just drugs are floating everywhere and they're landing on your beaches. And it's wreaking havoc, apparently, on the local population there because just these drugs end up in the South Pacific Islands. And then there is crime associated afterwards, like criminals coming through there. It's just a kind of a tense and scary situation.
Consider also the massive inequality and the economic straits that a lot of those countries are going through. This kind of stuff can be enormously disruptive. Now, on this show, we've made a pretty clear stance on never moralizing to people about drugs. But when it comes to this kind of crime, it's safe to say there's always more to the story. There's often stuff they don't want you to know. Yes, of course, the syndicate. It sounds like someone in Italy is having a very bad couple of weeks right now. But also, you know, there are things some of the authorities don't want you to know, not necessarily in terms of corruption or something like that, but also in terms of detection. What tools do they use to find these planes, to find these boats? And how, I don't know, it's almost like how in auto racing, a team that's building a race car tries to find every loophole they can to avoid the regulations that are updated every single race, or every single year, I should say. And we're in a similar situation with authorities and smugglers. Honestly, you can see technological trends in this competition, and they're usually led or pioneered by the smugglers. Necessity, it turns out, is the mother of invention once again. We'll update as this story develops, and we promise, well, we can't promise we'll tell you if we run into 500 kilograms of cocaine, but I don't know, guys, what do you think? Maybe we stick with smuggling as a topic and explore something, I don't know, what would you say, related but different after we get back from the break?
I think that's a smashing idea. And
We're back, continuing with our strange news episode for today, and continuing with the theme of drug smuggling. Only we're going to start this one off on a little bit of a lighter note and then take it a little heavier. But the actual story that I found that's going to lead to some other conversation was drug smuggling cat escapes high security Sri Lankan prison. And this is a real story. So there's two parts to this story. The first part is that authorities in Sri Lanka at this super max security prison called Walikada Prison, they detained, is how the article puts it, this cat who was trying to basically sneak in with 2 grams of heroin and 2 SIM cards, like for cell phones and a memory chip, that was in this little plastic bag tied around the cat's collar. And this is part of a larger issue at this prison of smuggling in drugs for the inmates who are members of a particular gang to sell to other inmates, and also smuggling in cell phones. We know this is a thing here in the States as well. But this cat was basically trained to do this, to do these kind of maneuvers. And it is suspected that it is connected to a particular underworld crime boss by the name of Ngoda Loka, also known for using an eagle to smuggle drugs in Colombo, in a suburban area of Colombo there in Sri Lanka. This crime boss actually died while on the run from the authorities earlier last month in July. And this is another story entirely, but also very recently, a man and a woman who were 30 and 19 respectively were arrested this past Sunday for illegally cremating this crime boss's remains, and also forging identity documents. And this is according to the New Indian Express. So, okay, authorities at the prison detain said smuggling cat, and then, like a true maverick of animal, you know, drug smuggling, this cat gives them the slip. I imagine no longer carrying the drugs, that those were probably confiscated at this point. But yeah, the cat is on the loose. And the authorities at this prison still don't know where the cat is. And the article here makes a really good, fun point about how there's no legislation governing the idea of animal arrest in Sri Lanka. But rest assured that authorities are going to have some things to talk to that cat about, which is the craziest thing I've said all week. What do you guys think? Who comes off looking the worst here? Is it the authorities for losing the cat? The drug smugglers for using a cat to... Is it clever? Is it absolutely diabolical? Where are we at here, guys?
Well, I would say, first thing, good on the smuggler or the cat trainer for keeping the drugs and other paraphernalia on the exterior of the cat and not attempting to, like, smuggle it inside the cat.
Yeah, that's a good silver lining there, Matt. I like that. We've done episodes on Ridiculous History about crazy animal spies. And there was definitely a cat at one point that had like a listening device surgically implanted in the cat. Ben, you remember that one?
Yeah, I first ran into it in Stuff They Don't Want You to Know with Animal Spies. You're referring to, I believe, Project Acoustic Kitty, which yes. is one of the Central Intelligence Agency's attempts to weaponize animals or give them a sort of function. It's a tale as old as time. You know, we have seen stories alleging animals acting on behalf of criminals or acting on behalf, actually, it's intelligence agencies. That's where we see the main accusations. And sometimes the people reporting those look kind of foolish. You know, you guys remember we did an episode a while back on allegations of animal spies that were there was an incredible spike of these in the Middle East, right? With all sorts of animals. Typically, an Arab country would allege that Israel was creating animal spies. And sometimes they were just animals that had been tagged by a biologist who was trying to track an endangered population or a migratory population. However, I want to go back to your thing. I don't know if there's someone who looks foolish, because this is a real thing. The cat doesn't look foolish. The cat looks like a boss. And yeah. The cat's, yeah. And the thing about Angoda Loca, that's the alias, right? Get this, Angoda Loca was 35 when he died. He was poisoned. That's why they burned the body. If you can, if you see that New Indian Express article you mentioned, he was poisoned in early July. So maybe this story, when did the cat get caught again?
Just a couple of days ago.
Oh, so maybe the cat then is, it's time for a young up and comer in the criminal organization to try some new techniques, right? Let's get the drugs out of people's butts and onto the collars of cats.
Sorry. No, the cat escaped just a couple of days ago. They actually caught the cat. I mean, it couldn't have been very long from when they caught it to when it escaped. What does it say here? It was detained last week.
And we're recording this August 3rd. What's weird here is being a lover of animals, I wanted to see if we could get some pictures of this foiled feline criminal mastermind. And I found them and immediately had like, I don't know, the closest I've had to a feeling in 2020. This poor cat looks not only as though he or she knows that they've been caught, but looks like they know they are facing criminal time. I don't know.
Hard time. Yeah.
They haven't heard about the Sri Lankan lack of animal crime laws.
And it says here in the one I'm looking at that the picture was taken on August 1st. So that's just a couple of days ago. I think this one is ultimately a kind of a light sort of cautionary tale. I mean, first of all, here's my thing about cats. They always say like herding cats because cats are notoriously like they do their own thing and they're kind of hard to control. So it takes a lot of training to get cats to do anything other than what the cat wants to do. And I wonder if maybe this cat just wasn't trained particularly well and that's how it got caught or what. But then at the same time, for it to have like escaped, it's pretty impressive. You're right, Ben. The cat comes out looking like a champ in this story. But here's the thing. Animals being caught up in the drug trade is absolutely a thing. Whether it's exotic animals that are being traded in the same way that, you know, drugs are, a lot of the cartels that move drugs also move illegal, endangered species or exotic species that are not legal to buy and sell in the same way that they move large quantities of drugs. Not to mention, there's this really heartbreaking article in Reuters called Exotic Animals Trapped in Net of Drug Trade that talks about everything from boa constrictors having, condoms full of cocaine surgically implanted in them and shipped to shipments of, let's say, poisonous venomous snakes being stuffed with parcels of drugs. And then the crates are labeled venomous snakes do not handle in an attempt to get the customs to kind of like overlook that one or not mess with it. And then things like turtle skin are very popular for making boots and other, clothing items that drug cartel bosses are quite fond of. And I know that seems like, how could that be that big of an issue? But it appears to be. In 2007, there was a sting conducted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service where undercover agents spent 3 years getting inside of this ring that was smuggling endangered sea turtle skins from southern Mexico into the United States. And there's a trail of drugs on both sides of the border that was uncovered during this investigation as well. You also have, this one's kind of creative, actually. I mean, they all are, but they're just also super inhumane. For example, there's something called liquid cocaine, which I was unaware of. And it's just like it sounds, liquid cocaine. It's apparently very vaguely yellowish in hue. And they, smugglers will put bags of the stuff mixed in with plastic bags full of tropical fish. So very, very difficult to detect that because it almost appears completely transparent if you look through it. So the story I mentioned earlier about the boa constrictors, it was 312 boa constrictors that were found at Miami's International Airport in 1993 containing condoms full of cocaine weighing 80 pounds or 36 kilograms. And all of those snakes ended up getting killed. Not to mention things like zoos, you know, having white tigers as pets or having, you know, any other kind of creature that, that really probably is not meant to be kept in captivity. It's another big weird flex that, you know, drug lords like to do.
It's also a, I think, a study in how quickly the cost benefit analysis or the risk analysis can go awry, because we have to remember for every one of these interdictions, for every one of these arrests or discoveries or recoveries of drugs, there's usually going to be a high likelihood that this is an iteration of an earlier operation that was conducted successfully, meaning that coke snakes had crossed over a border or two before. That's why they were willing to gamble using these snakes. And consider also that the snakes can fetch their own price without being drug stuffed, right? Without being hot pocketed full of narcotics. They can fetch their own price on the foreign animal market, which is also booming and also often illegal. But what's interesting here, I think, about the two stories is that we see a common theme, like some sort of cartel Icarus. These dealers and these smugglers flew too close to the supply side sun. They lost the plane, probably because they overloaded it with coke, and then they lost the snakes. And they lost several other animals as well, to your example, because they overloaded them. You know, it sounds like maybe, I don't know, wouldn't you think if you were in charge of a drug cartel, fellow listeners, wouldn't you want a veterinarian on hand to tell you how much cocaine can or can't go into a snake?
You would think.
Probably be a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think you'd have like some sort of logistics operative, to help you, you know, make sure you didn't overload your Cessna with cocaine either. So,
that's the theme I'm talking about. Yeah.
Totally. No, 100%, Ben, you're right on. Well, I guess that's that one. How about we take a quick break and then talk about some other weird, not necessarily smuggling, but some weird stuff happening in the mail.
And we're back. More and more, this is seeming like a shipping and posting episode. But this is something that we wanted to bring to your attention if you haven't heard it yet. It did break in the mainstream recently. A while back, people in the United States started receiving strange packages. This is not in itself extraordinary. Mail gets misdirected all the time, right? It's, if you think about it, it's odd that you get the stuff you order as consistently as you do. I hope I don't jinx us. Knock on wood. Someone save the post office. But here's what makes this case different. People started getting weird, unsolicited packages that purported to be from China, from the country of China. These packages appeared to contain seeds. They were mysterious. Some people who received these had ordered other seeds. They were gardeners. They were aspiring, you know, farmers, urban farmers, and so on. But other people were just checking the mail and finding a bizarre package. This has happened now in all 50 states at some point. It's still happening today. You know, we have early stories where people started reporting this on Facebook, and then they started seeing friends of friends of friends sharing the story and saying, hey, I thought I was the only one getting these, wait for it, bad seeds. So no one knew what this was, right? And now as xenophobia and nationalism are at a rise here in the U.S., people, of course, started thinking, am I part of a large-scale attack, you know, on the heartland of America? Are these invasive species? Are these literally poisoned or bad seeds that are meant to, you know, wreak environmental havoc of some sort? This story in particular is interesting to me because, first off, we can confirm it's happened over a short period of time to many, many people in the U.S., and also because we are luckily today fortunate, I guess, I would say fortunate, by some great mysterious coincidence, one of us has personal experience with this phenomenon.
What?
Yes, I do, actually. So Okay, we're in quarantine. We have been for a while, or like semi-quarantine, right? So all of us have been receiving, I'm going to assume, more packages than normal, right? I think we've kind of become accustomed to that at this point. Well, usually you get a package at your front door. If you're like me and you know, you live in a house, sometimes if the package is small enough, they just stuff it in your mailbox or wherever your mail slot is. They give it to you that way. Well, the other day I went out to check the mail and there was this little gray looking packet in there that had a lot of Chinese characters on it. I wasn't sure what it was and something clicked in my mind and I remembered reading something on Reddit about mysterious packages of seeds showing up at people's houses. Then I started to freak out a little bit. Took it to my wife, asked her about it, and she said, oh, no, I ordered those. I said, what? What?
wait, what? Okay.
And they do, it says jewelry on the packet, like on the actual shipping thing, it says jewelry. So whoever is shipping these things also shipped my wife these, and she says she ordered wildflowers. From somewhere on Amazon or something, and then they ended up coming from China in this weird package. It was just this odd scenario. So I don't know if those are actually the wildflower seeds that Diana ordered, mm-hmm. or these came mm-hmm. separately, and there's no way for us to confirm it right now.
You could.
So did you open it?
You could grow them. Get kind of a little Shop of Horrors situation. I'll feed your monster plant.
I'm afraid to grow them because it could be an invasive species and we'd get them all over our lawn. And then all of a sudden this whole area has just got whatever that is.
Well, what's the kind of consensus about what's going on with this in the first place?
Oh,
yeah, there is an answer. I wanted to bring this up and have at least some sort of solution for us. So just very recently, as we're going in to record, the USDA has arrived at an answer, and it helped allay some of the fears that people were understandably laboring under. They have so far identified 14 different species of seeds, and none of them are too crazy. There's mint, sage, rosemary, mustard, cabbage. One would be morning glory. That might be of interest to anyone who's read the Anarchist Cookbook, and you know why. I'm not gonna say it if you don't know. We're a family show, but I don't want to condone it. But there is a reason. It is not for altruism that these seeds may be being sent. This may be part of a pretty well-known and fairly successful online scam that, Matt, you may have remembered we discussed in a previous episode. It's the concept of brushing.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. I was going to ask about that. That was where you get sent stuff you didn't order, essentially, or it could even just be like a box of trash or like crumpled papers, and the purpose is to inflate vendors' numbers for their sales, I think. Is that the deal?
Well, yeah. Fake reviews, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can prove that they shipped it, and then they can, these unethical shippers or vendors can go in and say, not only do we ship, you know, X amount of stuff, or not only has our shipping increased by X percentage, but also look at our amazing reviews. Everyone loves this quote unquote jewelry, right? And everybody actually wanted these mustard seeds. It's strange because we saw people, you know, again, rightly worried, especially given all the geopolitical tension between the two superpowers now. They were rightly worried that something nefarious might be afoot. And it is, but it's like small-time crime. No one's trying to start a new, you know, hyper-aggressive kudzu problem or something. Kudzu, by the way, would be one of the most famous invasive species in the U.S. from China. And as much as I hate to bust the myth, it's not as invasive, or it's not as successful as people think.
Sure is annoying, though, if you got too much of it on your property.
How will you sip a julep with your backyard view so obscured? Yeah, so hopefully this can function as a way to again, reassure some people. We should say that botanists and folks at the USDA always recommend in general, not just getting random seeds in the mail and then planting them. But I am, honestly, I get a lot of weird international correspondence, and I am just, I am sad, guys. Well, I know I should feel sad that I haven't received any mysterious mail. Don't you guys like mysterious mail?
You know, I'm suspicious of just about any mail that I get these days, just because it's like, well, who's still sending stuff in the mail? Okay, and I don't want to sound like I'm negging the post office. I know the post office is a very, very important service, and it's going to be even more important during this election that's coming up when we really need to depend on them for delivering a lot of these mail-in ballots. But yeah, like, you know, every time I pull stuff out of my mailbox and I instantly regard it with suspicion, because it's usually a bill that I'm getting somewhere else, like online, or it's some kind of spam.
I don't know. Mail is one thing, but the amount of callers who have been leaving messages on my phone, who have been just calling my number at weird times, sometimes asking for personal information, even if it seems legit or it may very well be legitimate, I am so just against giving any personal information over the phone.
Never call me.
Yeah.
Just never call me, you know. I would pay a phone carrier an extra $15 to $20, $25 even a month to pretend that my phone was just always out of a service range of some sort, and then to leave a message. Like, we can, I know not everybody agrees, but it's 2020. You can text people. You know, I feel what you're saying, Matt. Have you guys ever got the call? For a while, people were getting random cold calls in Mandarin. I was receiving some,
yeah.
Oh no, and Cantonese as well. I was receiving some of those. I also got some calls. I'm sure we've all experienced this listening today, where you get a call from an unrecognized number, and you get a you get a voicemail, and you check the voicemail, and it's only part of a clearly recorded message. So it picks up with like, Amifer at GemDL Delta and blah, blah, blah. Please call back at your earliest convenience. 78. Like, that's how it sounds.
Dude, I got one today. This is terrifying to me. I got one today, and it was an actual person. It wasn't a recording. And he was asking for someone of a different name and saying that he had papers, something to serve this person that is not me, with some kind of papers, and there would be legal action taken if I didn't do it. So I returned the call to say, hey, this is not that person, whoever you're trying to reach, just so you know, you've got the wrong contact information. And I asked him what this whole thing was about and why, and he said, well, I can't tell you that. I can't say anything about that. I said, oh, okay, so is there some kind of legal matter, or what is this for? I can't talk to you. It's fine. We took the number off. I was like, so you can't tell me what my number was associated with? No. Bye.
Sketchy.
Yikes. Not to mention, that stuff has gotten even worse during the pandemic because of basically preying on older folks and using things that are specifically pandemic related, you know, about their name being on some list or medical information that they're trying to receive or whatever it is. Just really horrible, horrible abusive behavior. Remember when there was a brief period of time where this was a big one, where you'd get a call from your own number and you're like, hey, wait a minute, is it me calling myself from the future to warn me? And then, of course, you know, a handful of people would pick up, and that's when they start, you know, like say, oh, I'm the phone company, and you've been hacked, and we need to verify your details. And so many people that just aren't, it's not nothing to do with intelligence. It's just kind of, some people are just, they're not used to that, and they trust someone that has an authoritative tone. You know what I mean?
I don't know. We just have to be, to your point, Matt, we have to exercise caution on the phone. You do not know who is on the other end of the line, and you do not know how many ears are between you speaking and that person hearing. It's the opposite of secure communication. Well, here we are. Don't open strange seeds. Please don't use your pets to smuggle drugs.
Don't overload your Cessnas.
and codename Doc Holliday. Our super producer's new name is Alexis, codename Doc Holliday Jackson. I think we've learned a lot today, but You know, I don't know. Did you guys run into this as well? Were you having a hard time choosing just one story?
Yeah, there was one about a Florida man. I don't know if you saw this one, about a man in Florida that rode on the front of a semi-truck trailer for quite a while there. That was an interesting one.
Yeah, I had another one that was about this. I love a good Florida man, by the way, Matt. That was about this weird, like, unidentifiable dead creature that washed up on the shores of a beach in England. But it just wasn't much to it. Everyone thought it was described as, like, it looked like a horse that ate a donkey that ate a porpoise. And it smelled really bad. And it had fins, but also things that looked like hooves. But it turns out it was a porpoise. A horribly, horribly decomposed and rotting, stinky porpoise carcass. Porpoise carcass. That's fun to say.
Porpoise carcass.
I don't know where we would have gone with that conversation, though, so I'm glad I decided to pivot to drugs, drug smuggling cat. But I did want to keep it in the animal kingdom.
There we go.
Yeah, I think if you reverse it and make it carcass porpoise, it feels like a really good band.
Ooh.
To me.
Carcass porpoise. I like it. There was the one, my second place contender. Maybe we can make this a segment, the stories we didn't quite get to. One that I thought was really interesting pertaining to an earlier conversation we have had on this show is the idea of zombie cicadas. I may have mentioned this. There's a mind-controlling fungus that's out loose in the U.S. right now, specifically in West Virginia. It's this parasitic fungus called Massospora, and it infects cicadas, and then it controls their brain, and it also forces their genitalia to decay and get replaced by fungus, and then it makes it very amorous, so it goes out under the appearing to breed with other insects, but really, instead of bumping uglies, it's just infecting them with fungus. Evolution is terrifying, guys.
No question about it, sir. And I got to say, I resent the expression bumping uglies. The human anatomy is beautiful.
I don't know. I mean, some parts of it, yeah, but you know.
All right. Fair enough.
Well, that's our show, folks. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. We hope that you enjoyed this week's strange news, and we hope that you have stories of your own. We would love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter. We like to recommend Here's Where It Gets Crazy for the Facebook inclined. That is the number one community page in all of Facebook, a very prestigious award given by us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. It's going to win it every year running, I guarantee. Some of the best folks on the internet occupying this group. So check it out. All you got to do is name me and Matt and Ben, or one of us, or three of us, or Alexis, nickname or no, Paul, super producer, just a joke, something to let us know that you're not a Russian bot, that you actually know what the show is. If you don't want to do that, you can find us as individuals on social media. I am on Instagram at HowNowNoelBrown.
I am hidden this time on Instagram. You'll never find me.
Whereas I am hopefully easy to find online, at least you can find me on Twitter, where I am at Ben Bolin, HSW. And you can find me building survival kits currently on Instagram at Ben Bolin. Not the most creative name, but I was trying to save the creativity for the post. What do I do if I want to talk to you guys, but I hate social media, you're asking? Well, we have an answer for you, especially if you were thinking, come on, man, phone calls are great. More people should use the phone more often.
Yes. Just pick up the horn and dial 1-833-STDWYTK. You will hear Ben tell you that stuff is getting crazy, and that's when you'll know to leave your message. It can be up to 3 minutes. If you can't get it in that time, just call back. We'll see him pop up that way. Let us know anything you want to tell us. We accept. We will listen. If you don't want to do that, you can always send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.